Hello, and we're very, very happy that so many people came. This seems to be a topic that a lot of people are interested in. We want to talk about feminism. We want to talk about women and geek culture. And this is actually a topic that has been discussed before in different communities, from different angles, and with people that have different experiences. And we have come together here as several people who are from different communities who do different things. And we have here Svenja Schröder, and we have Ella Seiter, Heather Kelly, and Lena Simon. Maybe you can introduce yourself and say a little something about what you do and where you come from.
Okay, I guess I'm going to start. My name is Svenja Schröder, and I consider myself being a researcher. And I used to work for university for 2 years in computer science, and I studied something called applied communication and media science with a heavy focus on computer science. So I guess I'm a bit like a light computer scientist. And in my free time, I used to organize queer and feminist events and shows and parties and concerts. And I'm always very happy when I can combine those two parts of my life, like computer science, hackery, geekery, and the feminist, queer-related part in my life. And this is what I do most of my time.
My name is Eleanor Seita. I work for a day job. I've been a consultant for some 6 years now. And I also do design work and artwork of various kinds, kind of all over the map. I'm speaking here on privacy as well. I've also talked on architecture and the future of sex and all sorts of things.
I'm actually, is this working? No, okay, there we go. I'm Heather Kelly, and I'm a video game designer and media artist, based currently in Montreal, Canada, but I'm American. And I've been doing video game production and design for about 15 years, starting on projects for girls, but also many other AAA titles for all sorts of people. And for 7 years, I was chair and or co-chair of an organization for women in video game development. So that's the short version.
Yeah, my name is Lena Simon. I study philosophy, politics, and German linguistics in Potsdam. And I'm a free software activist. And I'm also a member of the German Pirate Party and a member of the Fürbot, which, for instance, organizes the Freedom Not Fear demonstrations in Berlin. I consider myself being a geek but not a hacker, so I don't hack, but I'm really interested in the political and philosophical part about the whole net and digitalization part of the society, and so I'm very interested in the developments in this area.
Yeah. So we have some topics to talk about today, and some of them maybe you already grasped. We're going to talk about gaming. And narratives there in games, as well as the professional part of gaming. And we're going to talk about media activism and politics. We're going to talk about something that maybe some of you have thought about or have been involved in, or simply attended to, real life hacker communities and hacker spaces, and academia, education, and what it's like in IT workplaces. now that we have a short introduction round of the panelists, we wanted to have another round of where we can say what feminism is to us. So maybe you can start, Lena. What is feminism to you? What does it mean in your life?
Well, to be honest, I never considered myself to be I consider myself to be a very moderate feminist, but recently I found out that some people, especially within the Pirates, think differently. I grew up in a feminist household, and I considered some things to be, you know, like really normal, and I didn't think that a lot of things have to be mentioned all the time again. But when I started to socialize within the hacker community, there were some things I considered to be normal which weren't quite. And when I started to talk about this, I started to have problems. So up until the moment when I didn't address people with this topic, I was quite fine, but there was some problem talking about this, and ever since then I'm a little I have a few problems because people keep talking only about that, and I had the moment when I found out that I can't really work on my topics anymore because the problem with feminism issues got that big. So I really thought, okay, I need to work on this area first. But actually, I want to work on my topics and on the really political topics. And I would like to be feminism and how women and men treat each other to be just not an issue anymore.
Mm-hmm. And Heather, what is feminism to you?
When I was thinking about how to answer this, I was having a hard time because I realized it's because, well, there isn't just one feminism, and anyone on this panel will tell you that, but I think the problem for me was that I don't even just have one feminism, and I couldn't decide which one really I would represent as my feminism. But if I looked at it at its very basic level, it would be about human rights and about the sheer reality that people are treated differently based on qualities that they couldn't choose about their biological or cultural situation, and that many of those crystallize around male and female or gender identity, and that feminism is trying to look at those problems through this lens of gender and solve some of those problems, not only with men and women, but that's sort of where the foundations of it started, and so that's why it's still called feminism. And that I fall in, that my range of feminism is quite broad, so I don't know if I would nail it down to one particular example beyond that general definition. Sorry.
So I guess I became a feminist most strongly in college. I was doing a CS degree, and seeing how other women interacted with the faculty and the courses and stuff really kind of opened my eyes. I identify, to the extent that I want to put a name on it, as a radical feminist, not in the sense of being especially extreme, but in the political sense that says that the problems that feminism needs to address aren't simply about any specific issue. It's not about, oh, we need to achieve parity in some sort of representation in some specific place. It's that the fundamental power structures about how women and men interact, the fundamental inequalities there of the way society treats people, both in terms of gender, in terms of class, in terms of race, in all of these different categories, that until you erase those fundamental biases and those fundamental oppressions, you can't actually have any kind of equality that you know, it doesn't matter if you have any specific marker that you're choosing to measure equality by. Until you clear up the fundamental inequalities, you can't actually have a free society or an equal society. And so that's kind of, that's my perspective on feminism, which is a lot bigger than just what is traditionally thought of as just sort of the scope of feminism. It's not just about gender. It's about everyone is human. Everyone is fundamentally equal.
So maybe I'm going to, yeah. For me, it's more like the queer feminism. I don't know if you're familiar with the term queer. It's about like, how can I say, deconstructing binaries, like gender binaries or binaries of sexual orientation. And yeah, for me, that's one part of feminism. I'm really not content with the gender binary system. It's like it's only male and female and nothing in between. It's like, I think that totally sucks. And for me also, feminism is like, I really can't stand sexism. And I want to get rid of sexism. I don't want people treated unequally by their gender. And yeah, I think there's even more. It's like Ella said, but those are the two major points why I consider myself being a feminist. And what I really wanted to say also was like, for me, feminism is like, yeah, it's I really can't stand sexists and not men. You know, it's like not every man is a sexist. That's what I always wanted to say in such a big panel, because it's also like not every woman is a feminist and not every feminist is a woman, and that's really a point. It's not against men, it's against sexists and of either gender.
And having different points of view and different experiences was the point with doing this panel and coming together and just saying what bothers us. And the first thing that we wanted to address or that we wanted to talk about, first topic is gaming. And since gaming is popular, it's pop culture, and it's a big industry, not least, it's very present in society and a lot of people play games. So the first question is, which gender stereotypes, are there gender stereotypes in gaming? I think Svenja wanted to talk about that a little bit.
Maybe I can start a bit. Well, yeah, there are definitely gender stereotypes in gaming. For example, if you look at Princess Peach, there's definitely the princess problem. It's like Peach gets kidnapped every time. It has to be rescued by Mario, and which is very stereotypical. And I think this was since the first part of Super Mario that Princess Peach is kidnapped every time, and it's so tiring, it's so boring, it's like every time the same story, and you think like, why can't Peach empower herself and like just, well, take stuff in her own hands? And well, there's actually one game for the Nintendo DS where Peach is like the actor and like run, it's a little jump and run, and where she like jumps through the level, but she has like certain superpowers, like she can cry, and then water comes, she can laugh, or it's like several superpower emotions, which is really like super stupid. It's like she could have thrown fireballs, she could have like had a big cannon or something. No, she can cry, she can laugh, she can whatever. It's very, very boring, and this is the, for me personally, the most annoying gender stereotype in gaming, because I'm a big Nintendo fangirl, and this is always so disgusting to see. Yeah, so much for me about gender stereotypes in gaming.
And Heather, you do a lot of game programming, but you are also very known in the landscape of games. What do you think about gender stereotypes in gaming?
Well, it makes me think of maybe the early days when I was developing content for girls. That some of the products I was working on were actually really cool. It was a time when there was this idea of girl power that was gaining a lot of popularity, and it was about getting girls using technology. And so we were doing some really fun things, making websites for preteen girls. And then, like, within a year of working on that kind of content, we were asked to work on, like, projects hired for other companies. And it was more mainstream companies, and they were asking more and more for very stereotypical girl things. And it was pretty difficult because it just got more and more about either dressing up or thing or what's some examples, you know, applying the right makeup or there's a game that where you go shopping in the mall and so it was really kind of painful and I was actually at that afterwards I got another job and I think. The first project they put me on was a pirate game actually, and I was so happy. I was like, I'm working on a game about a pirate ship, and I was able to get a female character included on the pirate ship, and that made me so much happier than working on a product that was specifically for girls, but dealing only in the gender stereotypes that the big companies were promoting for them. Which I mean, if we wanted to look at it as a much larger topic. The companies are making those because the parents are asking for them and the children are also asking for them, so it's not just being forced on anyone, it's a part of a system, a very a terrible system, a cycle of reinforcing the stereotypes from many, many, many angles. What are some other thoughts? Well, of course, I've also worked on games like Xbox games and other things such as that. One game I worked on was a Star Wars game, and we had the opportunity to actually create a female protagonist for this Star Wars game. And oh man, I should know my Star Wars trivia better than this, but the character that we decided to make this lead character, who kicked ass by the way, was Twi'lek. Do you know what that is?
What?
Twi'lek? I don't know how you would say it. Basically the kind that have the sort of head tail things that are kind of like tentacles on their heads and are usually slaves. So like not entirely fully dressed slave, but she was running around in a Star Wars universe kicking ass. So and she was kind of a rogue character. So in a way, I think that fits somewhat within my range of feminism as well, in that, like, taking what was traditionally in the Star Wars universe a very objectified character and actually making her the subject and making her have an actual story and some depth and also, of course, you know, kicking ass. So that's maybe another experience. But most of the time, the female characters in games that are made for a grown audience are not quite so protagonistic. There's a lot of examples to bring out, but I'd actually be rather interested in hearing what some of the other panelists like have to say about that.
Okay.
Nothing to say.
Sorry, I'm not much of a gamer.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Does anyone have experiences in gaming communities? How it's there on forums and, I don't know, depending on the game, how it is when people play in raids and stuff?
Well, one thing I could say is that coming from the perspective of someone who's developing them, we have a constant problem of much like the hacker community, not having quite enough women that are actually making these games. But what it leads to is the content itself is not reflecting the interests of a wider proportion of women because they aren't making it. So it's like this chicken and egg problem that we're always trying to get more women making games so that we could get more games that women would play. And until you have that content, not as many women are even seeing it as a possibility for them, and so you don't have them being interested in creating them. So we're constantly trying to solve that. So that's one thing we see in the games industry is that because we make content and make media, and that media has not the majority of it, but the majority that gets media attention is using these stereotypes. It's harder than like. It makes our job harder to try to find more women getting into and staying in the creation of video games. So it's something we've been like I've been trying to work on for like literally over 10 years and haven't seen much improvement. So that's.
Is the rise in mobile gaming and kind of less formal gaming changing any of that?
Yes, I would say there's probably a lot more women. I don't have statistics, but anecdotally, I know a lot of women who are working in online games or mobile games or Facebook games, browser games. I don't know what the percentages are, but I would say they are better. So that is changing it somewhat, but it doesn't seem to change the overall the games that are still getting the attention and that are considered more high profile, the more AAA EA games or Ubisoft or other big budget games.
There's not much carryover between the two
companies? I'm not seeing that, and it's really pretty channelized, but maybe that's because those other games are really new, and you'll see more crossover as they mature.
See is that there are a lot more games for young women and young girls and women, especially for the Nintendo DS or the Wii, because those are gaming platforms which are very popular with families, and I think you can say that there are a lot more games for women and girls, especially teeny girls. But if you have a look at those games, this is really horrible, because it's like Pony Farm, How to Be a Princess, How to Be a Model. And okay, I have to admit, I'm a big fan of Cooking Mama. That's a game where you like cut food and then cook it, and then you get like appreciated by mama if you're good at cooking. But you cannot really say that this is like a feminist game. Maybe if you, not really, but I really like it, I have to admit that. But there are a lot of those games, and I don't know, maybe does...
Well, is it the content or is it how it's marketed? You know, is it that it's expected to only be... Well, I think I would have really loved a pony game when I was younger, I just can't say, well, it's only... it was forced on me. No, I would have been ecstatically happy if there had been, in my childhood, some kind of game like that. But the fact that it's... If a boy was caught playing it, he would be considered, he'd be... mocked, I suppose, but I know what happens. Actually, it's just that they'll play the game in secret and not tell any of their friends that they're playing it.
Maybe, who knows?
Well, that's what I've heard, basically. So, but yeah, to me, it's more that the games are expecting a certain gendered behavior. Not that they're available, but just that they're only considered to be for one or the other.
Yes, but well, I'm also not the. Well, I'm not the Pony Farm type, and I'm also not the princess type, but what did I play as a child? I played Super Street Fighter and Super Mario and Sonic the Super Hedgehog, I don't know, all this stuff, but there wasn't really a figure which I could identify with. It's like I could never really identify, but we have to mention that there always also were like subversive video gaming characters, for example, from Metroid. How is she called? It's, what's her name? So can somebody help out?
Yeah. Somebody know the Metroid character, female character's name? Seamus.
Seamus, yes. Yes. And most of the time you don't really notice that she's a woman and she's really invisible as a character, but still she is. I don't know. Sometimes you get the outer perspective and then you maybe see breasts. I don't know. I never played the 3D games. But, maybe you know of other subversive video gaming female characters? I don't know.
Well, there's at least one in Zelda, Legend of Zelda. Zelda herself is sometimes kind of subversive.
Yes, she was a pirate.
What are some other examples?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe we can settle this later. You said something about the chicken and egg problem, and maybe part of chicken and egg problems is if we want to, or most people who want to pursue a profession or get more skilled at something, they have to go through education institutions. And that's something that we also wanted to talk about, how it is in in school and university with IT computer science skills and also to the studies. But first we're starting with early on with school. And Lena, what do you think are women's or girls' experiences in school with coding, with math, with physics, engineering?
Well, my time in school is now, my time in school is now over for, I think, 6 years, but that's quite close. And I see my sisters in school, how they work with computers and how they not really get interested in them a lot. And I myself, I found out about my interest about computers way after school, and that's a pity because I might have studied computer sciences if I found out about that earlier. When I was in 11th grade, my experience was that there was a course, computer sciences, and a bunch of the guys of our class decided to go there, and I asked what it was about and if it could be interesting for me, and the teacher asked me about my math grade, and he said, oh, if you have just a 3, you probably shouldn't go to computer sciences because it involves a lot of math and very complicated math. Later, when I studied philosophy and I needed to do a very difficult logical tests, I found out it was not my logical ability that made my math grade bad, but just a lack of interest in math problems, but computer problems are a little more interesting to me, so maybe it could have interested me very much, and maybe it would have changed my choice of study topics. So that's really sad, and I'm a little frustrated about that, because I think a school should show or should help you find out about your interests, and if you find teachers who, you know, like tell you not to do computer sciences because that's not really your thing, or that's really sad, because a lot of the guys, they didn't really talk about their math grade, they just went to the course, and it just didn't occur to me that this could be something interesting for me. On the other hand, I arrived here in the geek area, and I kept asking myself why what it was that made me come here, or be or show interest. And at some time, I remembered that my mother once dragged me to an internet course far outside of, very far away. And I was very confused at the time why we had to drive a long time to go to this internet course, because there was were also classes nearby. But my mother later told me that this internet course was given by a woman. And she found it important that I had female role models in the area, and I think it really made a difference, because if you see a woman working on technology, it just makes sense that you work with it as well. And so I really think that the role model thing is very important. And with my little sisters, I try to be something, the cool big sister who works with computers and knows everything. But they just don't cling to it as I like, and they use Facebook and they do their stuff, but they don't show interest in how it really works. And of course, it's also because their parents don't really encourage them to work on computers, but on the other hand, I think there should be much more happening in school than, you need to do this on your computer, or you need to do your homework on computer. And I think there's still very much to do in school and education.
I think, Heather, you said something about that you would like to see more single-sex education in computer science, or?
Yeah, speaking specifically of education, it's rather controversial, but I really believe in single-sex education, especially for women, and I wasn't really quite sure whether the same would be true for guys, and I was doing some research to get ready for the panel, and it turns out that it actually is also really good for boys to have a single-sex education in some cases. The point that the research was proving is that you can't just put boys in one room and girls in another and teach them the same way and expect that that's going to like just fix everything. But I do know from personal experience, having gone to what you would call university, my undergraduate education at a school exclusively for women, that it puts all women in the position of having to do everything. So there is no gender, there's no stereotyping of, oh, well, the guys are going to do better in math and science, because there are no guys doing math and science. You're all doing, you know, whatever it is that would normally be considered gendered. And it turns out that the same is true in reverse for boys if the class if the teachers are trained in this kind of situation, that normally boys are now seen as not doing so well in English and things like that. But apparently once they're put in a classroom where they're not seen, it's not seen as a bad thing to be able to do, you know, to analyze a poem or something, then it will improve a lot. So I thought that was interesting, because previously I'd only thought it was better for the girls to be sort of forced really to do the math and science and other like things that normally they might have been intimidated out of. You should from day one never have co-ed classrooms. I'm not exactly sure when that intervention or when it makes the most sense to have that, but I do believe that having like maybe even classes at co-ed universities that are specifically for men or women in the subjects that they're not normally expected to exhibit, or you know, the qualities they're not expected to have, could be beneficial. I know that had a lot to do with things that I started to do with technology, working on the school newspaper, or you know, where it was all like that was like the only place in the day and age. The things like the school newspaper were the places where we were actually already using computers, and a lot of other places were still analog. So I was going to make one other point about it, though. If I think of it, I'll ask for the mic back, but that's my short synopsis.
Okay. yes. Many women get a higher education. They start as university students, and I think at least in most first world countries, it's 50-50 roundabout. Svenja, what happens there? What happened during your studies? You studied computer science.
I studied partly computer science.
Okay.
Mm. And I cannot speak for everybody who is studying computer science, but there were like some awkward moments I had. For example, I was in this super theoretical computer science course at university when I was a student, and I think I was the only woman in the room, and everybody was looking at me like I was an alien, and that was really strange. Or I had some other experiences that people wanted to offer me help, and I thought, why do you want to help me? I'm totally fine with all this stuff. And it turned out that they maybe thought I'm not able to do this stuff, or they wanted to flirt at me, which is really annoying. But okay, I think this really got better in the last years. I really have to say this got better. And things for me personally get better when I became a teacher at university in computer science myself. So this was really great, because I could be a role model. I also was a role model for some female students, and also for male students. And this was really great, because I could I showed them that, hey, I'm a woman and I can do computer science. That's not what I said, but maybe that's what they thought. And I think sometimes just somebody has to come to women and tell them, hey, you can do computer science. And this is simple, but yet very effective. And that's what I learned, especially when I was a teacher at university.
After university, you are supposed to, or whether or not you go to university, actually, you're supposed to be a part of the workforce and work every day and make money to sustain yourself. We also wanted to address the workplace and especially the IT workplace. I think Ella would like to say something about what bugs you about professional IT.
I guess I'm not necessarily going to make any sweeping statements, but there's a couple of things that I've seen as patterns in the workplace which are really kind of interesting. I mean, a lot of it comes down to the assumptions that people make. You know, when I walk into a room, there's definitely a lot of the time like, oh, wait, you know, are you actually the technical person on this team, that kind of thing. And a lot of the time, as a consultant, I've been able to avoid a lot of that because it's like, well, okay, you're the person that they sent. Clearly, you're going to be able to deal with the problems. And I've been fairly lucky in being able to kind of sort that stuff out pretty quickly. But I've also seen a lot of other people not necessarily, you know, have a harder time getting through that, have a harder time getting taken seriously. And kind of to the degree where it's almost ridiculous. Like, some years back, I was in a meeting. There were, I think, me and one other woman and five or six guys. We were talking about some problem, you know, trying to figure something out. And somebody asked a question, and the other woman at the table, you know, gave the answer, like, oh, well, that's how it works. And, you know, and it wasn't like people didn't hear her. Like, there was a pause, and, you know, as everybody was thinking about it, and she gave an answer. And then everyone else just sort of went on talking as though they literally didn't hear her. Just like literally did not even hear her. And it wasn't that, you know, it wasn't that people were distracted or anything like that. It was to the point where it's like, okay, 30 seconds later when people were still talking, it was like, wait, didn't you guys just hear what this woman said? You know, she just answered this question. And seeing stuff like that that's that blatant when you're paying attention to it, and this wasn't that, I mean, this was maybe 2006, you know, this wasn't that long ago. This is not like, oh, you know, back in the dark ages, you know, that things are still that blatant is really kind of disturbing. Let's see. It's, yeah, I don't know. I, in a lot of ways, it seems really odd that people are so, you know, are so willing to ignore people's contributions like that. I mean, this was a woman who was earning just as much in that case as everyone else at that table, you know, and they, you know, they were paying for that answer. You know, this is not, you know, this is, you know, why ignore that big chunk of the workforce? Some of the other patterns I've seen, most of the, or a large number of the women I've seen who do well in security, who do well in that kind of IT, have ended up having to sort of suppress their identity as female in a certain kind of way in order to be taken seriously. You know, that if you show up on a job site looking femme, you get ignored. So some people are aware of this, some people aren't. You know, but I've seen a lot of women in the community end up having to shift to presenting more and more butch, just because if they don't, nobody pays attention to them, nobody notices. And it's, you know, some people realize they're doing this, some people don't realize they're doing this, some people it's just like, well, you know, this is who I am anyway, so it's just really convenient that this ends up working out fine. Some people it's a much more intentional tactic. Some people either it's not really an option for them, or they don't realize it's an option for them, or they're not willing to. And I've seen a lot of people kind of pay the price for that in terms of getting ignored, getting passed over for positions, not getting hired when, you know, I mean, I've at one company I was at, which was, you know, relatively liberal, I presented 5 or 6 female candidates for open positions that were just as qualified as the male candidates that I presented. All the men that I sent them got hired. The women almost universally didn't. You know, and this was, you know, it wasn't something that was, it wasn't quite blatant enough that I could call them on it. But, you know, that kind of thing still does happen pretty visibly. One of the other things which I think is interesting to look at there is the way that one of the areas where feminism isn't just about the status of women in the workforce. In technical culture, there tends to be one of the modes of interaction that I see a lot for problem solving is somebody will suggest, oh, maybe this is a solution. And then somebody else tears that solution down. It's like, no, this is all wrong. There's this problem and this problem and this problem. And then they're expected to like, well, maybe it's like this. And then the other person tears that down. And yes, this does, you know, this is a valid way of solving problems in some ways. But it's really combative. It takes a lot of energy. It's not necessarily the most efficient way of solving problems. And yet it seems to be this really dominant discourse in specifically male-dominated technical cultures. One of the things which has been really, really eye-opening for me is the times when I have been able to work with other women, which hasn't happened that often in security. And it's like, oh, well, suddenly there's this huge range of other ways of solving problems that is accessible, that we can actually say, okay, let's go, you know, let's go do something, you know, let's think about this in another style. And suddenly it's been like, oh, we're actually getting a lot more work done, you know, because we're not pushing our egos around, because we're not, you know, trying to, you know, spending all of this time in this kind of social combat that's like, yeah, it's mostly about the problem, but there is ego that gets bound up into it and that kind of thing. This is kind of one of the ways where that sort of feminist culture, or that lack of, you know, lack of integration with a feminist culture can, I think, actually hurt the technical community a lot, whether it's in academia or in the workplace or wherever.
Mm-hmm. Lena, I think you wanted to react to that.
I just wanted to add something to the education thing, which
I
forgot before. Last year I visited kindergarten, so it's even earlier than school, where children were taught how to work with a computer, first steps. And I asked the kindergarten teacher about if there was the behavior, if it was different between boys and girls. And she said, no, she isn't noticing anything. And I had a closer look on the thing, and I noticed that the girls, almost all the girls did as they were told and shared a computer, whereas the boys often had a computer on their own and didn't let other children work with them together, so the boys had more time on the computer. Especially also because when the kindergarten teacher came and said, okay, we have to tidy up now the room and we have to clean up everything, come on and help, the girls stood up and helped and the boys stayed on the computer as long as possible. So there was different behavior with the children, within the children, and also within the kindergarten teacher. They treated the children differently because they didn't tell the boys to share a computer when they saw that or when that woman didn't do that when she obviously saw that a boy is using a computer on his own when he wasn't supposed to, and they left the boys sitting at the computer when they already told all the children to go away there. So I think there still is a really visible difference, and there still is, and also within the youngest children. So I don't think that this is a problem which is going away within the next 2 or 3 decades.
The next bigger topic we wanted to talk about was hacker spaces and politics and activism. And I think all the people in that are sitting here, if I'm not wrong, many, at least most, have been to a hackerspace or have been involved in building one or running one. And a hackerspace, since the term hacker has something to do with questioning how things work, making them work differently, better, or just breaking them to see what comes out of the process. Maybe you would also suspect that they would be open to questioning stereotypes in terms of gender and how gender relations work or not work. And some do, many do actually, but sometimes you also run into that person. And maybe we can start with Svenja and what's it like to enter a space, to enter a hacker space for a girl or a woman?
Sorry, that totally depends on the space. So I've entered several hacker spaces and they all had various different cultures. And well, I once was in a hackerspace where everybody was like very technical, which was very strange because the only woman which I saw there was cleaning the floor, and I thought like, that's not so good, I guess, I don't know. But I think, well, hackerspaces are a place where things are supposed to be better and somehow also are better, but they're not always better. I don't know how to say. But still, there are a lot of hackerspaces are dealing with the problem that not so many women are coming there, or women are first considered as being the girlfriend of somebody. And that brings me to the term, we should really talk about what we can do later, so we shouldn't forget that topic. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And what really, really was strange for me was that quota, which came over geek feminism, maybe you can help me, that women, wives and girlfriends are the most evil enemy of hacker spaces. That was a quota from a local hackerspace list, mailing list.
It was the mailing list from hackerspaces.org, the discussion list.
Oh, okay, it was the discussion list. Mm. And this was really alienating me because I thought, why? It's great if girlfriends and wives hang out at hackerspaces. That's really great. Maybe they come in touch with techniques and maybe they get interested. And that's really a great idea. Why should girlfriends and wives be enemies of hackerspaces? I really couldn't understand that, but okay, I didn't read the whole post. I'm sorry. It was too disturbing to read that. I think it was about they are stealing time from men, which they could otherwise spend in hackerspaces. I think it was that way. Yes. Okay. I read the whole post. I'm always bad at remembering. And I think it's the opposite. It's really, really great if girlfriends and wives and women spend time in hackerspaces because they get in touch. They can bring up new solutions. They bring up new topics. Maybe, for example, wearable computing is such a topic where things, typical household things like knitting and sewing and felting can be combined with awesome electronics. And I think there are fields where you can really combine your different backgrounds. And I think nobody should forget that. Maybe somebody else wants to add something?
Yeah, I would like to interject here with some imagery. May we look at some of the photos that I took earlier today? Regarding the local hackerspace, the one that's like downstairs. Yeah. That's what I found this morning when I entered the hackerspace at SIGINT this year. Is that welcoming? I mean, and I don't
it's
know how
not.
Long, no. That was a rhetorical question. So I think there's something to be said for hackerspaces needing to be a little more welcoming by not having something that would be potentially offensive, very clearly. And if, you know, we could talk about why it's there, why it stayed there, but that was my impression. I've been to many other hackerspaces, and this was the first one where there was actually something that I was like, wow, I'm sort of shocked. Maybe this is some kind of crazy irony, but I don't think so. I don't really know what was going on, but I was very surprised.
Half of the room is clapping, half of the room is not.
I guess I'd like to say I'd be surprised by that, but I've also been to professional conferences where I was, where work was paying, $1,500 US for me to go there, and it's like, oh yeah, it's perfectly appropriate to show hardcore porn during a technical talk at a conference where people are paying $1,800 US a head to an audience of 1,000 people. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. There's no reason why anyone might have a problem with that. I think that there are a lot of cases like this where it's like, okay, yeah, you may not have a problem with that, and that's fine that you don't have a problem with that, but you don't get to choose whether or not someone else has a problem with that. You know, that if you want to claim that you want other people in that space and that you actually respect those other people as human beings, if they don't like something, you have to listen to it. And you don't have to listen to it and say, oh, well, I don't find it offensive for the reasons that they say they find it offensive, so they must be wrong. No, you have to actually respect that, yeah, they get to choose what they find offensive, and you get to choose, do you actually want to be inclusive? Do you actually care? Does it actually matter to you that you have a space that preserves this kind of equality? Do you want to... I mean, even if you don't care so much about the equality, if you have to be willing to say, okay, well, you know, maybe I don't find that so offensive and I'd rather have it be up there. You have to accept that, yeah, that means you're being misogynist, like actively, you know, that is, you know, in the moment when you laugh at a joke that's misogynistic, that's what you're doing, that's who you're being. In a lot of ways, feminism isn't about big actions. It's not about big statements. It's about the everyday lived experience. It's about saying, you know, standing up and saying, hey, that's not really right. Like, I think that might not be okay for everybody. That's not really being very welcoming. You know, and it's not that you can't ever have raunchy humor, but yeah, you do have to say, oh yeah, this, you know, if somebody's offended, you stop. You know, you think about it.
This picture wasn't there when you went back an hour ago or so, something. So maybe is someone in the room who went there and said, please take this off because it's offensive and it might scare
women away? It's possible someone
away.
Just printed something else and it scrolled up and came over the other side. So.
But maybe the good person, if it existed, is in the room, and I would like to thank the person. It doesn't seem that way, so...
No, I think they started printing the Twitter feed to it and it just scrolled off, so there was no good person.
But maybe we could take that down too now. Ella, you have been involved in founding a hackerspace, which started out as a workshop. Yeah. And maybe how would you say one could help and nurture gender equality and diverse environment? Only by saying we listen. Is there something you can do actively, or what do you think about that?
You know, it's not necessarily easy to start a space that's really inclusive. It takes a lot of work. If you just start a space and it's like, hey, we're open to everybody, and I'm going to like invite all my friends to join up and that kind of thing, and you know, and it's a hacker space, and chances are, if you're a hacker, you're probably a white male. You're probably at least middle class, And so are most of your friends. And so you start a space and you don't go out of your way to change that, you're going to end up with a hacker space that's mostly white middle class men. And you know, this isn't true everywhere. There's always exceptions and that kind of thing. So I guess the first thing would be that if you want to change this, you have to actually commit to it and you have to actually say, yeah, I'm going to put effort into it. This is something which is actually important. And again, you know, if you don't want to say that equality is important to you, you know, be upfront about that. Like, yeah, we don't really care if there's any women, if there's any people of color in the space. Like, that doesn't matter to us. We don't care if we're classist. It's cool. You know, it costs 200 euros a month if you can't pay. You know, no problem. You can join another cheaper hackerspace or start your own. You know, yeah, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of fighting. It takes a lot of politics to go through all of these issues and come up with the solutions. It's not just about gender. It's about race. It's about class. It's about politics. It's about all of these kind of different groups. It's about being inclusive to queer people, whatever. One of the specific notes that I have for hackerspaces that I've seen repeated, I don't know how much it happens in Europe. I've seen it repeated all across the US. You have a hackerspace, it's like, oh, well, we need a space. We need like a physical place to open. So we go find an industrial space in a kind of a cheaper neighborhood. And then it's just a whole bunch of people from outside of that neighborhood going into the space. And like in the US, you know, we have a hacker, let's say you have a hackerspace, it's like, well, it's mostly in an African-American neighborhood, it's mostly in a Hispanic neighborhood, and yet everyone going to that hackerspace is white. And yeah, if you don't go out of your way to say, oh, let's let everybody near us know what's going on and invite them in, and not just invite them in this kind of passive way, but actively try to involve the neighborhood that we're in. You know, if you don't do that, you end up with this really exclusive space. In some ways, my experience with the hackerspace was kind of different. It's the space in question, Public Nerd Area in Seattle in the US, was started as a private shop for myself, another woman, and one guy who is now still running it. Because it started as a private shop, that I was, you know, I was one of the subleases, there was never kind of any question of like, oh, do I belong there, that kind of thing. So, you know, I got lucky, I got to avoid a lot of that stuff, and I could also afford at the time to contribute. The three of us paid 18,000 US between us to build out the space. So, you know, there is a lot of money in there. It wasn't the case that if, you know, if somebody had come and wanted to join in, you know, you have to deal with, oh, well, this person wants to join in. They don't have the money to pay that out. They don't necessarily have any more time than you. You know, I mean, one of the solutions that's commonly offered when you're starting a hackerspace for dealing with money issues is, oh, well, if you can't afford to pay in whatever the dues are, you can work more and, like, you know, earn your dues that way. But, you know, just because somebody's broke doesn't mean they have more time. You know, they're probably working, they may be working multiple jobs, they may have less time than you do. So if you want to be inclusive, you have to deal with those issues and figure out ways to solve that kind of thing. One of the things which is thrown back in a lot of cases when you have that sort of an organization are that, well, you know, we don't want to have quotas. We can, you know, if we have like quotas, then, you know, that it's not fair. It's, you know, then the men are being discriminated or the white people are being discriminated against or whatever the category is. You need, if you have this kind of structural oppression, which is what this is, you know, that there is this cultural structure that's not, you know, no one specific is to blame. It's just how it happens that, you know, women don't end up in these spaces. If you want to counteract that, you have to do so actively. If you don't actually do something, you know, if you don't say, this is what we're specifically doing to bring in these categories of people that we want to exist in this space, then that won't happen. You know, so if you don't, and it doesn't mean it has to be a quota, it does, you know, I mean, whatever the specific tool you're using is doesn't matter. But if you say that, oh, we can't have any special programs for specific categories of people we want in these spaces, then you're not going to bring them in because you're not doing anything to counteract these kinds of structural oppressions.
We want later on to talk more about what you can do to encourage people to come. But in this complex of politics, activism, hacker spaces, places where you come together and talk about not only the purely technical things, but also what it means. Elena Simon is a member of the German Pirate Party, and there has recently been some noise. I mean, I personally am from Germany, but now I live in a country somewhere far, far away. But I'm not really in the discussion. But to me, it was a lot of noise about one person, and I was wondering if Lena maybe wanted to tell us what was going on there and what that was about.
Yeah. To get your own view on the thing, you can go to the web and read some of the things. What happened out of my point of view was that I felt more and more uncomfortable with the situation with guys and how women were treated within this community, and most pirates believe that we reached a phase where we live in post-feminism, and I don't think that's true, and I think we still have to talk about problems we have within within our communities, and I think habits that have been going on for thousands of years don't go away within 20 years, and even if they were gone by now, we should take a closer look on if they're not coming back, because if I'm used to do something, it tends to come back even if I overcame it. And what I did was opening a mailing list only for women. So my experience was that women talk differently if they are just on their own. What you said with the classes, and on some topics, I got a lot of women talk very, very differently in a only women group, and I don't know exactly why that is, but I guess if there's only guys and no women, they talk differently as well. So that's not necessarily a bad thing, but still, there's some things women don't tell each other in a mixed group. So, and I just didn't want to lose for the pirates. I didn't want to lose women who feel uncomfortable and didn't have a place where to tell about that. And I myself was in exactly this situation, that I thought about leaving the pirate party because I felt uncomfortable, and I thought about women I could talk to about that, and every time I addressed a woman to tell her about how my situation was, she started to discuss with me about post-feminism and how we are post-gender, and I didn't need a political discussion at the time. I needed someone to talk to about my my problems, and so. What I'm criticized for is that I didn't talk to any woman before I did what I did, but actually I tried to, but I didn't find anyone. So I thought, okay, we need an address where women can go to and can talk about if they have problems. If there are no problems, we still need this place for just in case. And so I founded this mailing list, and it's women only, and this had a lot of critiques because it is said to be not transparent, which I don't think does anything to do with each other, because if I have only one person and I talk to her or in confident situation, it's not transparent either, so what the heck. And I was said to be sexist and discriminating against men and all of this. So yeah, that's actually what happened. And I got quite famous within the Pirate Party, which I didn't really expect, because all I did was opening a mailing list, and this happens thousands of times every day in the web. So, and it was a private mailing list. It was nothing said that said, okay, this is officially by the Pirate Party or something like that. And last week I confronted myself with the criticism out of the members of the Pirate Party when I when I was trying to be elected as one of the leaders. Mainly,
you ran for election.
I ran for election, right? Mainly because there was not one other woman running for election, and I was a little shocked by this. And then people said, "Okay, we want to vote for the women, but they are not applying. So, what should we do?" And then I said, "Okay, well, let's try it." And the problem I see is that at the time when the guys were talking and could be asked questions, not one of the women got up, except for me and my friend, to ask any question. And when I stood there, 50% of the questioners were women, and those were the most aggressive questions and the most the questions like, can you deal with it because you study, and can you cope with the time? And I was thinking, like, okay, there was a father with four children, and no one asked him if he has the time to cope with family and Pirate Party. But I with studying, that should be a time issue or something like that. Or another question was if I was able to look at the male side, which I really, I'm not scared that the male side is getting too short, is not getting enough
attention
within the Pirate Party. That was really interesting, because this question mainly came from women themselves, and I'm trying to figure out what's that all about. But that's basically what happened within the discussion. But also what happened was that a lot of guys came to me and said, "I think it's a great thing what you're doing, and keep on going, and don't let them push you down." And or guys who said, "Okay, I didn't really get what you wanted, but it sounds like you have a reason, so please explain it to me." And so what's important for me to say is that the guys in the Pirate Party are not all misogynic, but I think most of them don't get yet what's it about to be a woman in such a to be such a minority in as a woman in such a place. And a lot of the guys are very interested in finding out how to make the situation better.
Okay, so we were asked from different people, if we could provide any tips, any hints as how to be more welcoming, or how to encourage women to get into male-dominated areas like hackerspaces, like open source communities. And I think that what we want to show is not new, but it's something that we could agree on, and maybe showing it to you just explains it once more or a little better. I don't know. Can you get the slide up?
Which one?
The encouraging women in Linux.
The do's and don'ts, or the...
Yeah. Yep.
What's the third one?
Maybe a little smaller.
It's really huge. How do I make it smaller?
Control and minus.
Yeah, wo ist das Minus?
I think that's better.
Well. My favorite is don't call people bitches.
I really like this web site because it it has the do's and the don'ts, and it explains it as well. So, yeah. Does anyone want to?
My favorite one is don't take the keyboard away.
Or the soldering iron, for that matter.
Of course, it doesn't. That I did that with a microphone with you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Like, don't take the microphone away. Yeah. Of course, it's not meaning don't literally take it and hide it or something. It just means if a woman is working on something and you know, and you come along and she maybe asks a question, right? Don't just grab the keyboard and start doing things for her. We could go through all these points, or what do you want to do? Or we just look at highlights of it, or give the URL out? It's a really good list. I wouldn't want to give it too little attention.
Maybe everyone could just say the favorite points, or yeah.
Yeah, my favorite one is don't make sexual advances towards women, because it's really getting, or it gets annoying if, you know, like, you're in a room with 100 of other guys, and imagine how many maybe try to. It can get really annoying. It's written down there, so maybe you take a closer look afterwards. But still, you may be very friendly.
So this is a point. Well, that got better for me in the last years, but okay, maybe that comes with my butchy appearance, I don't know, because I look like the total butch. And what I always appreciated was when I was really actively invited into a hackerspace, and that was, or into another place, and this is really one thing you can do. If you care about having like more diversity in your space, whatever space that might be, can be political party, can be hackerspace, can be university, invite people. Tell them this is a place for them. Tell them they're welcome there. Maybe ask them what topics they would be interested in. Tell them what their interests are, and encourage them to come there and to work on their topics. And yeah, it's good for all of you, because you get new insights into new problems or new topics or new issues, and you can learn from each other, and a broader diversity is good for all of you.
Is it this list that has something about the actual physical location of your space? I can't remember. That might have been, it's either this one or it might have been Jens's list of design patterns. I can't remember. But it was about, like, when you actually put your hackerspace in a certain location, that you need to make sure it's safe, like that people can actually get to it without fearing for their life. And I think that's especially true if you're trying to encourage women to attend, is to not... put it somewhere safe and or near public transportation, and or have the lighting be good so that you're not, you know, not afraid of approaching this dark building. Really simple, obvious things like that, that, you know, it would be good for everybody, but especially for women. What other good ones are there on there? And I think a lot of, it isn't listed on here, but another point to sort of make is, I think it came up a few times, is the importance of role modeling. So anything you can do to get women in front of other people, including women audiences or guys, is really, really powerful, disproportionately powerful to the number of, like, you just have one woman, but if it's somebody that's representing and speaking, then, or like media, in the media articles about women, like there's a few different organizations for women in gaming, and both of the ones that I'm aware of have sort of speaker bureaus or ways to, if you want to have someone speak on gaming, you can get a hold of women that are actively doing that and sort of getting them out in front of the media so that other people out there can see just the representation of women doing something technical or something media related, and that's incredibly powerful. And I think that your example with the teacher, that your mom drove like a really long way to get you a teacher that, so you could just by example, she didn't have to tell you, but just by example, there was a woman that was doing this, and that things like that are really important.
When I was in high school, I ended up working at NASA Ames for, I guess, about 3 years, and the person I was working with there was a woman who invited me to come work under her. And there was never any question that women could be successful scientists, because there was this woman who was, you know, I mean, she was the one who taught me to program for the first time. I'm still kind of in awe of her programming ability, because she could type for 3 hours straight, writing Fortran 77 at 80 words a minute nonstop, you know, which was kind of intimidating, but it was just like, wow, of course women can do this. Of course women can do this really, really well. You know, there's no question, you know, and that made a real difference. That made it mean that, yeah, of course it's accessible. Of course it's right there.
For closing, we wanted to show some initiatives or websites where you can learn more. And I wanted to start with geekfeminism.org. It's a blog and it's a wiki, which is run by, well, many bloggers and geek feminists. It's in English, and they take up topics, different ones, but also how can you help women in different situations, how. It's about a really big selection of topics, and the comment sections are really interesting and very well moderated, which is not the least point if you read about this topic. There's always the trolls, and yeah. What did you want to show us?
I forgot to open it.
Okay, maybe someone else wants. Yeah.
I can show. I had three that I wanted to show. There. Okay. Yeah. Was it no? Well, yes. There's the two different organizations I mentioned for women who are doing or interested in doing professional game development, and one is womeninGames.org. You don't have to actually type the international in the URL. I know they have it. And then the other one is the next one, igda.org/women, and that's the organization that I was formerly co-chairing. So both of those are professional organizations or nonprofit organizations for women making games. But of course, and there's different discussion lists and message boards and things that you can join and take part in, and all of those are open also to anyone who's interested in the subject of women in gaming. You don't only have to be female. And then an online magazine called womengamers.com that is a little more from the perspective of game players, but they also often, in fact, like the top story right now is a subject about, there was an article in one of the mainstream video game professional publications called Gamma Sutra, and it was a top 50 developers for the last year or something like that, and people that had done projects recently, and there wasn't a single female in the entire list, and so there was kind of an uproar over that. And then, but it's also, womengamers.com is also focusing on games, like reviews and things like that, and other topics of interest to women who like to play games. It's not as career focused. So those are three different sources for discussion.
The thing I wanted to show you is how to encourage women on Linux. These are actually only the do's and don'ts, and the page itself is much more. And I think that's where they mentioned the thing about make your meetings be easy to attend. And it's a really great page. And the other thing, I forgot to open it in before, it's a FAQ about feminism, and a 101 FAQ, and I really, no, that's not the right. And it's really nice because you can go there to, here it is. You can go there either to find out things for yourself, or you can send people there. They actually say that. And there's the place where they ask, are you already a feminist and you're just looking for input? Then you can read this, and or were you sent here by a feminist? And the what's behind that is that what's behind every FAQ, that if you're talking about a topic and a newbie comes along and doesn't know heck about it and asks questions you have been answering thousands of times felt, then it gets really annoying to keep answering to these questions. So you say, oh, please go and read the FAQ. And and with feminist discussions, this happens really, really often. And so they started to form a FAQ on feminist questions, so that if someone comes along and asks a question which has been answered a million of times, they can just say, okay, go there and read the FAQ, and you get a lot of input. And I think it's a really nice place to page to start and to get some informations and to get some first ideas. And there are at the site there are some questions, and you can just go surf around there, and it's really nice, and it's made by a lot of women. So there are also different kind of answers, different views on the topic, and it's really worth the time and worth the look. And is this the time to promote my?
Yes.
Yeah, of course. I put some flyers on the chairs as well. But if you didn't get one, you can get some here. If you'd like to get involved a little more, in 2 weeks we are having this seminar meeting in Hattingen. Which is called Frauen im Net, and there's some places free left. So if you want to come and take part, it's going to be very interesting, I think. And here are the flyers, and the webpage is frauenim.net.
Alain wanted to add something.
A couple of things I wanted to mention: Linux Chicks. That's Chicks CHIX. .org is an international organization of women involved in the Linux community, which they run discussion lists, they do have things specifically for getting women involved in Linux, but it's also just, it's a technical community, it's a lot of things. It's a great resource to know about. And then the other thing that I wanted to mention, just kind of as a more general resource, it's somewhat US-centric, but feministing.com has a lot of general news, discussion, all sorts of things. So that's another good site to check out.
I can only add the German Gender Planet. Maybe you can open it, but you have to Google it. I don't know. It's not genderplanet.de, it's something else. And this is a planet which aggregates a lot of feeds from German blogs and feminist news. And if you are interested, yes. No, not this one. It's the third one. Yes, and it's in the gender wiki. Unfortunately, it's only just German. But maybe for those of you who appreciate more to read in German, this is maybe for you. Oh, no. Okay, you have to Google it. It's called Gender Planet. It's not this? No, it's not this. It's okay. But if you come to a site which aggregates German feminists' news, it's the Gender Planet. And what I wanted to add is I wanted to thank you, the organizers from the SIGINT, to be so interested in our panel and to give us the space to talk to you in this great place. I really wanted to thank the organizers. Thank you from all of us.
Yes, me too. I think we're ready for the Q&A or questions. And
thanks a lot for the really, really, really interesting conversation. First of all, I'm a male and I should shut up here, I guess. Really, in fact, I believe that most of the problems we have, especially in geek culture, is that people don't listen to other people. They just want to talk all the time. And especially for men. Men should just like sometimes shut up and listen to women, what they want to tell. But we have a problem here. And the problem is called the tweet feed. And I just checked the tweet feed, what people are writing about your conversation here, and I just want to quote two of them. The first one is, oh, 10 breasts on stage who talk feminism. Another one, it's actually my favorite one, it's, oh, frigid women who don't understand art, that's the real problem in society. And I mean, there are people sitting here writing that bullshit. And I was actually trying to, but I really have to mention that, and if you're still here. I mean, what the fuck? Okay.
Paintbrushes at dawn.
Does someone want to react to that, or no?
He said, "I'm sorry."
So I read the tweet about 10 breasts talking about feminism too, and I thought first. Well, maybe there's some guy trying to objectify women, but then I found out, no, that's probably not the case. It's just someone who's really not that well educated, and maybe they believe that women actually talk with their breasts. So SIGINT, of course, wants to be open to all kinds of people, even the not that much educated ones. So welcome. But I want to add something about being a picture of a naked woman being offensive. And I read a lot about, this is not really a problem so much, but it's actually a difference in morality between Europeans and Americans. So I know that Germans really like to be smug about, you know, being better than Americans, even though it took them two world wars.
If that's true, then why wasn't also a naked man on there?
I just want to add something to that. No, Germans really like to be smug about being better than Americans, even though it took them two world wars to understand the concept of democracy until Americans taught them about it. Maybe there's a different threshold of what is offensive to Europeans and to Americans. Let's not talk about that. And also, most women have seen a naked woman by looking in the mirror. So, yeah. The problem is the message you're sending across. You're putting up a naked woman just like you would put up a naked woman in a car repair shop or in a barrack for soldiers.
And it's offensive in the car repair shop, and you aren't the one who gets to decide what the standard is. That's the point.
What?
The point is that you don't get to decide who else finds things offensive and who doesn't. It's not just Americans that find it offensive. We're not all Americans up here. And there's other people, there's plenty of other, I mean, we're the ones who are saying this on stage.
Yes.
You know, there are plenty of other people who aren't on stage, who don't have the microphone in front of them right now, who may also be offended. They don't have the opportunity to speak. You know, you don't hear from them. That doesn't mean that they're not also offended. You know, if they don't have the social capital, to say anything, to make any change, you know, at a certain point you stop trying to say anything, because at a certain point you're just beating your head against the wall. But that doesn't mean that they're not still offended. And a lot of the time, instead of saying something, they just leave.
Exactly. I agree with you totally. And maybe I may just finish the sentence that I started. So what you're creating and what you're sending across is a message of, this is heteronormative space for men, just like a car repair shop, just like a barrack for soldiers. And if you don't feel offended as a woman, you are invited to play along, but you're not the priority here. So this is the real offense in my point of view. So it's not about you know, being shocked to death by seeing something naked. This is not what we're talking about. It's about what space you create, and you say the priority is we cater to male heterosexuals, and we don't cater to gays and to women. They are, of course, invited to participate, but they are not the priority here. That is very offensive.
That's accurate. Thank you for clearing that up, because that's absolutely true. It's definitely not about American prudishness or something like that. Yeah, I've seen naked women. Oh, yeah, a lot.
I think over there was one.
Thank you for the talk. I find that as a male, that one thing that's often not spoken in such discussions, mainly because, you know, men generally don't get on panels and talk about gender imbalances, is that this is the gender divisions are also in many ways harmful to men. And I think one of the panelists did touch upon this, that she mentioned that workplaces in IT are quite aggressive oftentimes. And I think a lot of that, or at least some part of that, is how us men are trained to be, in some ways, to try to dominate each other to a large extent. It also impacts other parts of our lives. Like, I think that when you really look at the subject, it's quite absurd that, you know, we segment ourselves into these two groups, and there's huge division. So, for example, if you go to a programmer conference, you'll have, you know, all the males, except for like a wife or whatever, all the programmers are males, and the people serving them at the restaurant are going to be women oftentimes. And the exceptions to the people serving them may be a male manager. And I think that there's something psychologically problematic when, you know, I don't think people can easily internalize that without that becoming weird in some part of their lives, internalizing a sort of absurdity. And so I feel that I should be asking a question. I don't know how to phrase my observation of this into a question. I just do think that in areas of your life, like just relationships, you know, your own personal relationship, when you have someone who's extremely close to you, and yet you see this person perhaps as like a thing to win, which is you know, part of male culture, that, you know, you see a person, that person's a woman, for example, if you're heterosexual, and there's a dominance relationship there, and I think that it just means that you're not living life in the way that your life could be, you know, and I think that's very important for males to understand about patriarchy or male supremacy, or whatever we call it. I don't even know what the word is, but that's supposed to be a question. I'm sorry.
I'd like to answer anyway. I appreciate that, I think what most of the guys don't or might not think about is that these differences are bad for them as well. So if for instance, if we take away or if the guys take away some powers of women, women are getting these powers back. They can be manipulative, and they have a lot of possibilities to get what they want, but maybe behind the back. And If the guys don't want to be manipulated by their girlfriend or whatever, this is also bad for them to take power away from the women, or to keep them down, because there are things that happen in response. And so guys should be very interested in having really, really equal, real equality between the genders, because that's also a bad thing for them.
Or if you apply that more to things that happen in, I don't know, hacker spaces or in other parts of, there are other parts of life. If you have such rigid gender roles that, well, only the man has the real power over the machine, while only the woman can do whatever else, the reproductive stuff, it's really hard for a man, or it can get hard for a man to say, well, I'd love to learn how to knit and how to maybe do other stuff. So it's you're not only hurting yourself, you're also limiting your life and what you can do with it a lot. I just wanted to add that.
I want to try to end on an up note, but I guess I don't know. I'm a man. I don't have the same perspective that you would on this, but do you think that the problems that we're talking about here and that we're describing, are they getting better or worse? My temptation is to say that they're getting better because I see improvement, but I recognize that I may not have a valid point of view on this one. So I was wondering, I guess, for all of the panelists, do you think that the problem of gender inequality is getting better or worse, and why, either way?
Maybe I can respond to that. It's really getting better, but it's not done, and that's the point. And this is something people always call like, well, it's gotten so much better. Now we're in the post-feminism or post-gender area. No, we're not. And I think everybody is somehow sexist. It just depends on how much you deal with it. And everybody has to deal with it with his or her or its own sexism. And this is really one point. Women, for example, are forced to deal with sexism and feminism and to look, what is it, where does this come from, why am I offended by this joke? And I think male people have to more often like really, yeah, get put onto the topic and then like take care of it and like reflect. And well, I read a blog article in a feminist blog a few years ago when I was at the CCC Congress. I think there were so many bad flirting attacks at me. It was really annoying that I was so angry that I wrote this angry blog post, and it really got better the last years. But because the people who are organizing conferences take care of involving women, which I really, really, really appreciate, and this is really a point. Mm-hmm. But we still have to have a look at that the topic is not gone or overgone, it's still there.
Maybe somebody else wants to add something, I don't know.
Yeah, I think in society in general, there's a new. It's gotten kind of a new phase, because the old feminist movement. Okay, we achieved a lot, and so that's done. And I think there's some inequalities or some problems coming back. For instance, in the adverts, there's a bunch of very beautiful photoshopped naked women out there on the street, and and young girls try to become like that, and girls think they have to shave all of different kinds of parts of their body, even if they're just 13, because they have to go to the swimming class, and they are being treated bad if they don't. So, or we have the new thing about the power woman who is able to cope with family and career, and what's really happening is that they just go over their possibilities, and they just get sick or do too much and don't have a really good life anymore. So I think as well that it's getting better, but it's being a little back and forth, because at the moment we start to say, okay, it's getting better now, so we can look the other way, and we can we don't talk about it anymore. It starts coming back, and I think that's why it's really important to keep looking there and to be to be patient and about it, because it's really coming back. And so, but within the computer techie area, I think it's getting better as well. But maybe that's because I'm at the moment at a CCC event where it is better than last week. But I think it's getting better.
I guess my comment there would be that women still earn in most countries, having controlled for social class, education, and race, 75 cents on the dollar to what men earn, and that with the economic downturn, those numbers have gotten worse. And there hasn't been a big shift there since 1970. And yes, there are definitely places where things have gotten better, but until there's parity there, until things like reproductive rights are not questioned, are not attacked, we can't say that there can be no, oh, we've arrived, and that won't happen in any stable, sustainable way until there has been fundamental change, until the fundamental power structures that cause those kinds of inequalities are gone.
Okay, I just quickly wanted to pass on the compliment for the audience. You've been very civilized.
Okay, first one observation. In this list of do's and don'ts to encourage women in Linux or whatever it was, in this list there was at, I think, point 13, which said, don't treat women stereotypically. And I found that I was quite surprised that it was only number 13, because I self-define as a more or less humanist, so I think that individual treatment should be the number one in the list. But I think what was really kind of astonishing for me is that if you look at point 15, it says don't criticize too much, because women are socialized to be far more sensitive to criticism than men. So for me, I don't feel that I can act appropriately to both points. And I would like to ask you response, how this problem which is expressed in this disparity can be addressed, and how somebody can act appropriately. I don't want to start a nature versus nurture a discussion here, but I would like to ask if we probably have to accept that there are some disparities which should not be treated by too much equalizing, but and making equal, but more by accepting differences.
I think I understand that this is not a document that is in total consistent, and yes, it is confusing, and to start listening and to start behaving like you say, human, with a distance to all these stereotypes that we face and that we have brought up, have been brought up with. But if in doubt, ask and listen, and you basically have to try to be welcoming, as we said before, and I think that's my take on it. Anyone wants to add something?
Or? So, I mean, ignore the stereotypes there. Don't criticize anybody overly, Actually think about what you're saying. Be kind to people. Try doing that for everyone. Don't just do it to women. And maybe that'll work better. It doesn't have to be about the stereotype. It's about just don't, you know, don't attack people when you don't need to. You know, try to just be nice to people and be friendly and see what happens. I don't think you don't have to be treating someone according to stereotypes to be kind to them and be human to them and realize, oh yeah, this, I could criticize them and it may be valid criticism, but if it's not going to be productive, why bother saying it? And I think that's a big part of what that's saying, is just, you know, be a decent person to everyone.
I've been having trouble recently when I try to get some female friends, very intelligent and successful women, try to get them interested in the kind of topics that were of this conference, and well, I just didn't. I even last night I failed completely with somebody I really like, and I didn't expect that. So I wanted to know whether you had maybe any suggestions how this could be more effective.
Yeah, that's a really, really good question, and I'm confronted with that all of the time because I think it is really, really important that women contribute more, and most of my friends are female friends are like, oh, I'm not interested in that, and they are really political, they are really intelligent, and or philosophical, and it bugs me that I can't tell them how really important that is, this issue is, this topic is. And that's part of the reason why I did this networking thing, to get more women involved in net politics, and to show them how the network is something that empowers them, and that the whole feminism, not the whole feminism, but a big part of feminism is just screwed if women say, okay, we don't want to have this part of empowerment, because the guys are taking it, and the guys are building networks, and women have to see that this is really a political and important issue. And I was really, really happy when I tried, when I was successful to convince my very feminist sister, who is political as well, in February, that it's really an important issue. And because I failed for several years trying to convince her, and that's part of what we are trying to find out in the seminar, how to encourage women, and that's why we also invite women who don't have anything to do with this topic yet to try to get them involved and to explain to them why it's important.
I think my suggestion would be to know the individual. You knew them, they were your friends, and try to find points of shared interest between what you know they already are interested in and then specific topics. I'm not even quite clear which topics of the conference you were trying to suggest, but I think maybe drawing parallels between what they already have interest in like, because they're not all going to be interested in the same thing, and then finding the topics that relate most to those, or finding analogies. That would be my suggestion. It would for anybody, in fact, not just for women that you want to be interested in, but other non-technical people. Simple, but that's what I'd say.
Okay, so I've got three more people on the list, you and you and you, okay. Anyone else? Okay.
Okay, I'm not an expert in feminism and gender, so please be patient if I simplify. As now I can see a kind of a conflict ways. On one side we have this separate and protect, on the other side we have the deconstruct gender movement. Actually, I'm living in a world where it's called deconstruct gender word, but it's only a really, really, really small part of society, so maybe both are needed. How do you see the future in geek feminism? Is it still the old separate and protect, or is it the deconstruct gender movement?
Both. I mean, I think that so one approaching this from the perspective of someone who thinks fairly radically in these, like, okay, yes, you want to break down these kinds of power structures, but that takes time, you know, and it's like, okay, on the one hand, yes, we want to, you know, work this stuff out in the long term, but, you know, in the short term, you also need to say, okay, yeah, we you know, we need to work for equal wages or whatever it is, you know, so that I think both threads will continue to be necessary, you know. I mean, in some ways you could say, you know, it's the tactical versus the strategic, but I think also it's just a complex issue, and it's like, okay, well, do we only want environmentalists or only want socialists? You know, like, well, you're gonna have both if you have a social system or a political system which has representation of different viewpoints. You know, I don't think that we will see feminism become any more monolithic than anything else's.
Well said.
So, I was asked over Twitter that I should explain heteronormativity. And yeah, so I don't know if anybody of you is familiar with the term heteronormativity. It basically says that there's a norm when it comes to like privileged persons or like person groups, and the norm definitely is like the male, middle class, white, heterosexual man. And everything which like is not in this norm is like underprivileged or like treated as the other. And so we are all speaking here about like women and men, and I would have loved to speak more about sexist and feminist or something like that. It's like Ella said, you have to do both. It's you can speak about men and women, but at some points it's difficult and not good to speak in that way. And it's when you say, like, if you deconstruct like men and women as the privileged and underprivileged positions in society, you can also add, you have on the one side the stereotypical heteronormative men, and maybe on the other side, like the others, well, okay, it's not two sides. It's very difficult when it comes to this part, but you can also speak of the underprivileged position with trans women, trans men, transgender person who are not the one or the other gender. It's like in between, or one day woman, other day something else, I don't know. And it's, yeah, sometimes being a non-typical gendered person is even worse than like being just a woman. It's, for example, look at me, I have short hair, I do not dress like the typical woman. I'm very often criticized for that, or like I'm not a real woman. Okay, I don't identify as a real woman or a femme, but this is also like, maybe this is something we can have in mind for further discussion. What about the queers? What about the perverts? What about the non-gendered persons? Where are all these people here in this discussion? Because I think those people are even less visible in this hacker space, hacker society, and in the whole society.
As long as we're answering Twitter questions, I have one too. someone said, I didn't say that I was being criticized by the Pirate Party for being a feminist, but for how I did what I did. And I'm being criticized for publishing openly in public that I'm opening this mailing list. In this press release, which I gave out in my own name, I wrote that the Pirate Party is not misogynic, and that we are working on this topic, and that my approach shows that. However, I'm not convinced that the protest that my what I did was only due to my action, because this press release was I started the whole thing on a Saturday, and the press release got in public on a Sunday, or at least people got aware of it at Saturday evening, Sunday morning. And in between that time, so between about 2 p.m. and the evening of Saturday, a lot happened. And it was like erasing a website, or the wiki was erased by people. The discussion was very far already when people got aware of the press release. So the critique that that came to came against me was not only because of this press release, because the press release was later, and earlier at the time I was attacked and called a sexist, and everything I heard in the next 2 months I already heard on this Saturday, and so I understand people who say, okay, this this press release was not right. I still don't think it was wrong, but I can accept that people think it was wrong. But I don't think the argument is working that this is the only reason why people criticize and attack me, because all the attacking happened also before the press release got public. So that's what I wanted to add.
Hi. What I want to say is like more an observation than a question, but I come from Eastern Europe, probably the only one in the whole, I don't know, and I like kind of have the feeling that in my home country, and I'm from Bulgaria, and probably in countries like Romania and the situation, like women in technical jobs and professions and studies, is a little bit different than here. And more specifically, for example, in the university at home, they're like more or less 50% women in subjects like physics or computer science or I don't know. And I personally ask myself, why is it that way? And why isn't that at all the case here? And I came up with like a couple of explanations, like probably that the communism in the past, the socialism actually encouraged the equality between men and women, and women picking typically men's jobs, I know, or probably because of the economic situation, that people generally, no matter men or women, need to take care of their like lives and provide for them, and being the breadwinner in the family, so they just picked something up that brought up enough of money, and this was, for instance, computer science or I don't know. And yeah, probably to wrap that up as a question, do you have kind of experience on that field, and do you have different thoughts on that topic? And do you think that the history or the cultural background, or I know, is kind of a responsive for women being pushed out of technical fields?
I don't think I have seen any numbers on this, but as far as I know, in Eastern Germany, the numbers were quite equal to what you just said. But after Eastern Germany and Western Germany became one country, I think this has changed again, and this is I think it's an example for how something that is has been a good thing that has been achieved can see a backlash, and how and that I think it's a sign for that you just have to work more for change in different areas, like for example that. Well, that I don't know what, if anyone else wants to say something about this. No, I think we don't know much about it. Oops.
I wanted to ask you if, with the discrimination in place in the general society or main culture, compared to discrimination, gender discrimination in subcultures, how do you perceive that? Because in one point, subcultures as punk, hardcore punk, heavy metal, or whatever, we kind of get equalized a bit through the fact that we are, to a certain extent, outside of general society, but then the numbers are much more extreme, or at least in these subcultures, than in general culture. You know, hardcore punk, you usually have 80% men and 20% women. Hackers here, it seems to be, is probably about 90 to 10 or something like that. So I just wanted to... Does the freakishness of people grouping together helps a bit, but or is it the numbers are so vast that the discrimination, even in the subcultures, is more dominant than in general culture?
I guess I'd sort of, in some ways, expect that a culture that sees itself as more outsider would be more understanding to the position of other people who find themselves as outsiders and say, oh, okay, you know, I know what that's like. I'm going to go out of my way to help bring these other people in. But for some reason, it doesn't seem to work that way. You know, it ends up being that, you know, oh, and maybe it's like, oh, I've got my little kingdom. Now I need to defend it from, I don't know why, you know, but...
I think most of the people just think very one-dimensional. They think like, wow, I'm so indie, I'm in the punk scene, now everything's fine, but it's not. It's like, I know that there, even in the, also in the hardcore punk scene, there's a reason why the Riot Girl scene came up in the States. I don't know if you know the Riot Girl scene, it started in the late 90s. It were women who were tired of standing in the second row and not being able to mosh in the mosh pit without like, dying, I don't know, and tired of getting excluded from bands, started their own little female punk rock movement. And I think, yeah, it's just, if you belong to a certain subgroup, it's, you shouldn't stop thinking when you're there and think of yourself as the other, but keep in mind that there are also other criteria which really exclude people.
I can speak to the example that in gaming there is about 10% in mainstream gaming, and in indie gaming there's probably even less than 10% women. I mean, it's a much smaller sample set to begin with, but it's a little disheartening. And I think that even the people in indie gaming, while wanting that to change, aren't really necessarily actively organizing to find ways to change that. But yeah, it's comparable to other subcultures.
Okay, so
yeah,
I just want to say something about the Twitter thing again, because all the questions that were asked here were really supportive and interested in the topic, and since we're not being streamed out there, it seems that all those who think who have really critic comments about it,
they
just tweet and they don't just say what they think. And I think it's a pity, because we could have talked way better than just going on the over the internet. And it's more secure, it's more safe. You don't have to get up and show your face saying some evil stuff, and I think it's a little it's not working that way. So I would have really appreciated those people to get up and say what they want to say, but say it.
Well, I think The person with the tweets which annoyed me the most has already left the room, so if somebody else is there, you can still stand up. I don't know.
Yeah, you have the chance now.
That was what I wanted to say. The person's probably left the room anyway before. So anyone remaining is still. So I think we really have to finish up. Some people want to have dinner. I thank you very much to all of the panelists, and I thank all of you in the audience very much for this discussion. And any one of you, if anyone should think, oh, do we need just another feminist discussion, like what Johannes said, the tweets he quoted, you see, as long as these tweets are happening, yeah, it is really a necessary discussion, I think. And yeah, I wish you good evening.